We're holding on page 192 in Brachos. Again, the page numbering in the Ein Yaakov seems to be messed up, but hopefully you can find it. I think the ones that are in Hebrew numbers are messed up, and the ones that are in Arabic numerals, like 192, are correct. In any case, it's one that the top of the page is Haroya Daf Nun Vav. Okay, so we're still in the middle of Ois Kuf Chaf Gimel, dealing with various things involving interpretation of dreams. In particular, we're in the middle of the story of Rava, Abaya, and Bar Hedya, where this Bar Hedya was a professional dream interpreter, and every time Rava had a dream and Abaya had a dream, they would both go to him, and because Rava didn't pay him and Abaya did, therefore he kept on giving Abaya good interpretations and Rava bad ones. So we talked about a couple of possibilities why Rava continued going to him anyway and why he didn't catch on that something's the matter over here. One possibility is they didn't necessarily have the dreams at the same time. Each one of them may have gone separately and neither one realizes that the other one had the same dreams. Could be that's one answer that Ritva gives. Another one is that Rava figured, look, you know, mazel is mazel. Abaya has good mazel, I don't. And then there's an explanation that various achronim talk about. We mentioned it yesterday, that the Hakosev seems to say something along this line, that maybe Rava was testing him to see whether this is it in fact the case, that the dream always follows the interpretation, which later on in the story, he discovers this point that we said before, but at this point in the story, Rava doesn't know that point yet. So as far as he knows, it's a matter of his mazel or something like that. A couple of achronim also talk about it. Doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, that he had a bad interpretation and the next day this thing happens. You know, it could be that it happens sometime later. We're going to have an example of that soon in the Gemara, actually. So therefore, he may not have realized that there is a direct connection between the dream and the interpretation that Bar Hedya gave him and this negative thing that happened to him. Anyway, so we're holding on page 192. The sixth line of the middle size lines. So continuing with more dreams of theirs. Amrile, Abaya and Rava both came to Bar Hedya with a dream, and they said, Chozan Chosa al Pumdani. We saw a head of lettuce on top of a barrel of wine. So what does that mean? La Abaya Omale, so to Abaya, who was paying him, Bar Hedya gave a good interpretation, Ayif Iska Kachasa. Your business is going to double over. You're going to double your profits, like the way a head of lettuce, like the way the leaves of lettuce are folded over. The Rava Amale Moder Iska Kachasa, and then Rava, he tells him, your business is going to be bitter like lettuce. We know that why is lettuce the preferred vegetable for Moder on Pesach? Because it starts out sweet, and eventually, if you let it grow too long, it becomes bitter. So the same way, Bar Hedya is using that to Rava to tell him that your business is going to be like a mature head of lettuce, which tastes bitter. Where with Moro, the idea is, you know, because originally the Mitzriim were very friendly to the Jewish people and sweet, and then afterwards they turned bitter. So here, yeah. So Amrile, next they tell them, Chozen Bisral Pumdani, we saw meat on top of a barrel of wine. La Abaya Omale, so Abaya, he says it means, Bosim Chamrach means your wine that you sell is going to be very tasty, very good quality. But also, Kula Alma Lemizban Bistra B'chamra Minach. So everybody's going to be coming to you to buy meat and wine. So that's why you saw meat on top of a wine barrel. People are going to be buying both those things from you because they're going to know they get good quality stuff from you. The Rava Amalei, on the other hand, Rava, he tells, Takif Chamrach, on the contrary, your wine is going to go sour. So everybody's going to be coming to buy meat to eat together with it. Like, in other words, the only thing people will be buying your wine for is as vinegar to dip their bread into. So, or do different, slightly different girsa that is that they'll get vinegar to roast their meat in. Whatever the case, the point is your wine is going to be fit to use only as vinegar because it's going to be spoiled. Next, Omel Amrile, they say to him a dream, Chozen Chavisa de Toli Bedikla. We saw a barrel of wine hanging from a palm tree. La Abaya Omele, so to Abaya, he gives the interpretation, Madli Iskach Kedikla. Your business is going to be up high like a palm tree. A palm tree is very tall. So the same way, your business is going to grow very tall and very successful. L'rova amalei, on the other hand, Rava, he tells him, chali iskach kitamri, your business will be sweet like dates that grow on a palm tree. Now, what does that mean? It's going to be sweet. So Rashi says it means, in other words, it's going to be a sweet deal for everybody else because they're going to be able to buy very cheaply because you're going to have to sell at a tremendous loss. So therefore, it's a sweet deal for them, but not so much for you. Some of the Mefoshim point out also, it can mean as far as the taste of his wine. There is, in fact, there's a Gemara in Menachos when it talks about the flour that you can use for Menachos and the wine that you can use and the various qualities of the different kinds of things that are supplied to the Beis Mikdash. So it mentions over there that wine that's oversweet is not really good. It's not good quality to bring on the Mizbeach. So the same way over here, Behedia is telling Rava, your wine is going to be oversweet, which is not really good quality wine, as opposed to he was telling Abaya that his wine is going to be very good quality and people are going to want to buy it. Next, Amrile, another time they told him, Chosen Rumana Dekadchi Apumdani. We saw pomegranate trees that were growing out of the mouths of barrels. Again, barrels of wine. So Abaya Omale Oshik Iskach Kerumna. So he tells Abaya what that means is your business is going to be expensive, and it's going to be expensive like a pomegranate. I mean, just as a pomegranate has many seeds, the same way you're going to be able to sell your wine and whatever else you sell at a high price. L'Rava, Omale Kavi Iskach Kerumna, to Rava, who still wasn't paying him, he said, your business is going to be sour like a pomegranate. Not really sour, but you think of a pomegranate as very tart. So therefore, it represents, in other words, the idea that your business is not going to be too successful. It's going to be tart and semi sour, like a pomegranate. Next, Amrilei Chosen Rumana. Amrilei Chosen Chavisa Dinofa Labeira. They both told Barhedia another time that they saw a dream where a barrel fell into a well. So Abaya, who paid him, he gives the good interpretation that it means that your business is going to be in great demand. You have a popular expression that says the bread fell into the well and you can't find it, meaning that was an expression people use of something that you really want to get a hold of, but it's unavailable. So in that sense, your business is going to be like that. People are going to be really wanting to buy from you, and it's going to sell out very quickly. So it'll be comparable to bread that fell into a well, and everybody is figuring how are we going to get it from there, and they're not able to. L'Rava Amalei Posid Iskach. On the other hand, Rava, he tells you your business is going to go bad. Whatever you sell, the Shadulei Lebeira, so people are just going to throw it into a pit because they can't do anything with it. It's worthless. They're just going to throw it away as garbage. Another time, Amrilei Chazinen Bar Chamra. We saw, each of us saw in our dream, a young donkey Dekoi Aisdan that was standing over our head. The word Isdan means at the head. Rashi brings, for example, by Yaakov, you know, when he slept on Hara Maria. So it says that he put the stones Mera'ah Shoysav around his head, and Targum Onkelos translated Isadoyi. So the word Isdan over here also means next to our head. So we saw a young donkey was standing there with Noya and was braying, making a noise. So what does that mean? La'abaya omalei, Sabaya, who was paying him, he says, it means Malka Havis, you are going to become a Rosh Yeshiva. The Koi Amira Alach, and an Amora is going to stand over you to announce what you're saying to the Tzibur. We know the way it worked in those days was a Rosh Yeshiva, when he's giving a shir, he would speak relatively quietly and briefly, and he'd have a Maturgamon, also called an Amora, who would stand there and explain it and call it out loudly and explain it for everybody who's listening. So he's telling Abaya, the donkey standing near your head and braying loudly, that represents the Maturgamon, that represents the Amora, who's going to be doing that for you as a Rosh Hashiva. Why it would be compared to a donkey? Well, first of all, again, you know, Bahedia is always trying to find the best possible spin for Abaya. But we do actually find in other places, the Gemara sometimes says that some of these Amoraim were not necessarily the greatest Chachamim themselves. They basically, they knew how to repeat over what the Rosh Hashiva is telling them, but they weren't necessarily such, some of them were. Sometimes we find Amoraim of the Chachamim, Meturgamonim and Amoraim of the Chachamim who distinguished some of the Chachamim themselves, but not always. So maybe that's why Bahedya figured he could interpret it as that it's talking about such a person. Anyway, L'Rava Amalei, Rava, he tells him, Peter Chamur Gohit Tfilach. In your tefillin, the word Peter Chamur is rubbed out, which means your tefillin apostle. Amalei, so that's why you have a donkey by your head, because you're talking about particularly your tefillin Chorosh. Amalei, so Rava says, what are you talking about? L'didi Chazoili, I just recently had my tefillin checked and I saw it. The Isay, and it does have the word Chamur is there. Amalei, so Bahedya says, fine. Maybe not the whole word, but Vav de Peter Chamur, Vave Gohit Mitfilach. No question about it. It means then at least that the Vav of the word Peter Chamur is rubbed out in your tefillin. Now, the deal with that is actually, first of all, Maharsha points out that this is a little bit different. You notice this is a little bit different than all the other things Bahedya had interpreted. All the other things were saying that the Gemara is going to say, Kol HaChalom Eshochon Achar HaPeh. But you're not saying that this happened already. You're saying the fact that the person gives an interpretation results, it causes, as we talked about the other day, the various explanations, how it is that causes that thing should actually happen. Whether partially because, as we said, a person's words have tremendous power, or because l'chatchila we're talking about a dream that has many different possible aspects of it, or because that itself it makes the person realize, hey, you know, there's a certain truth to this. It fits very well with my dream, and therefore that itself makes it more likely to happen, et cetera, all the different explanations that we talked about previously. But now Marshall says this one is unusual. He's talking about something that this must be actually true. He actually has enough knowledge, minashamayim, to actually know that there's something wrong with Rava's tefillin. Because sure enough, Ian Rava, Ba'ashkach Vav de Petach Hamur, Goit Betfile. So sure enough, he found that the Vav is rubbed out. Now, the interesting point is that the way the word Petach Hamur in that pasuk, it's in the parasha of Behoyakiv Yacho, Petach Hamur Tifteh Veseh, the word Hamur there, in fact, is spelt without a Vav in tefillin and in the Sefer Torah. So what Vav is rubbed out? So the Beis Yosef, in fact, brings an interesting point. What it means is the Sofer, when he first wrote Rava's Tefillin, he mistakenly wrote a Vav. Then he realized and erased it. Now, there's two possibilities. If he erased it before he continued writing, no problem. He's allowed to do that. But if he erased it only afterwards, then the Tefillin are written Shaloi Kisidron in Tefillin and Mezuzah. All the letters have to be written in order. And if not, the Tefillin Apostle. So now what happened is the Sofer went and the Sofer had erased the Vav and then we don't know, did he in fact erase it and then continue writing, or did he realize it afterwards, after the rest of the word and after maybe other words too had been written, and then erased the Vav, and then that would be possible. So now when Rava checks his tefillin and finds that in fact there was a letter there that's rubbed out, now he has to be concerned that maybe what Bahedia is saying, that so now he can't know. So is it in fact that the Sofer did it wrongly and the word, and it was written Shaloi Kisidron and therefore his tefillin apostle, or maybe not. Maybe the Sofer made a mistake but caught it right away and then the tefillin are kosher. Well, that's the thing. Bahedia was saying the whole time is trying to do bad by Rava. So now what it turns out, Rabbi Yosef explains, is in fact the Sofer had done correctly. He had written the letter wrongly, but then he corrected it before he went further, which is valid up the Alafa. But now, because of Bahedia's interpretation, Rava is now misled into thinking, or at least thinking that there's a suffix, that he might have to be concerned that it was not like that, and therefore, in fact, that his tefillin apostle, so now he has to go get himself a whole new pair of tefillin because of what Bahedia said, whereas if Bahedia hadn't told him that, or at least he hadn't told him in a way like that to try to do bad by him, then he might have been able to be soimach on the fact, you know, the sofer has a cheskes kashrus, that he probably did it correct. So therefore, on the one hand, what Bahedia is telling him is a factual thing, like Marshall says. The fact is there is clear evidence in his tefillin that something was erased and rewritten. On the other hand, he's maliciously telling it to him in a way that Rav is going to think that his tefillin are apostle and he has to replace them, when in fact that's not necessarily the case. That's how the Beis Yosef explains it. So the Gemara continues, L'soif ozo Rav l'chudei l'gabi. Eventually, Rova started going alone to Bar Hedya. So up until now, we had both Abaya and Rova. And again, it could mean they were actually both going at the same time and knew of each other, or it can mean they were going independently without knowing of each other. Now, in any case, Abaya stopped going to Bar Hedya for whatever reason. So now Rova is the only one going to him. But he still didn't know to start paying Bar Hedya yet. So he says to Bar Hedya, I saw in my dream that the outer door of my house fell down. Omalei, so Bar Hedya tells him, it means itzach shachba, means your wife is going to pass away. Your wife is like, she guards the house, so therefore she's like the door of the house, metaphorically. If the door falls down, it means that she's going to die. Omalei, another time, Rava tells him, chazoi kochi v'shinai denotru. I saw that my molars and my teeth, meaning my front teeth, fell out. There are actually places in Shas where the Tosfos discusses, there are places where Rashi seems to imply that kochi means the gums and shini then means the actual teeth. There are places where Tosfos points out that it didn't really work, because over here, how does a person see his gums falling out? Male of the teeth, but not that. So therefore, that Tosfos in those places explains that maybe that kochi means the back teeth, the molars, and shini would be the front teeth. Anyway, Rava is saying that I saw that in my dream. Omalei, so Bar Hedya tells him, it means b'nochov nosach shochban, means your sons and your daughters, your children are going to pass away. They're metaphorically, like they help protect you, like the way the teeth help protect the mouth and then the person's digestive system. Omalei, Rava tells him, chazoi tre yoni de parfan, I saw two doves flying away. Omalei, so Bar Hedya tells him, it means tauti noshi megaushes, means you're going to end up divorcing two wives. So not only are you going to have that, Rashi points out, a person's wife is metaphorically called a yoina, a dove. You have, for example, the pasuk in Shir HaShirim, yoinosi tamos, piskali achosi rayosi, yoinosi tamosi. So yoinosi can refer to my wife. So therefore, so he's telling him that they're flying away, indicating that you're going to end up divorcing two wives. So in other words, not only is your wife is your wife going to die, that he already said before, but in addition, you're going to remarry twice more and you're going to end up divorcing both of them. Omalei, another time, Rava tells him, Chazoi tauti gaudlidi delifta. I saw two turnips. Gaudlidi means the thick, the bulbs, like, you know, you buy a turnip, it's this big round thing. So I saw two big round turnips. Omalei, so Bar Hedya tells him, it means tren kofi balas. It means you're going to absorb two blows. The shape of a turnip head is kind of like the shape of a club. So it means you're going to be hit. You're going to get hit by two people with clubs which are shaped kind of like a turnip. So sure enough, the Gemara says, Rava figured, look, with all the other things Bar Hedya told me, there's nothing really I can do to prevent them. But at least this. So he went, Ahu Yoima, Biyasi Be Medrash, Kula Yoima. He went and sat in the Beis Medrash for the whole day. He figured, nobody's going to come beat me up with clubs in the Beis Medrash. Ashkach Hanu, then when he was going home at the end of the day, Ashkach Hanu Tre Sagi Nahori, as he was on his way home, he saw two blind people, Dahabu Kaminsi Bahadi Adadi, who were fighting with each other. Also Rava Laparokinu. So Rava went to try to break up the fight, to try and separate them from each other. Umachur, the Rava Tre. They ended up hitting him with their sticks. So sure enough, they had these heavy club-like sticks. Maybe they used them as walking sticks, whatever, but they ended up hitting him twice with them. Then he saw they were picking up their sticks, ready to hit him again. Omar, he says, Mistaye, that should be enough. Train Chazoy, I only saw two in my dream, and therefore it's Minashamayim that I should only get two blows, but not more than that. So Lusoif, in the end, also Rava B'Yohiv Le'agra. Eventually, Rava went and started paying Bar Hedya. Maybe now he finally caught on that it's not a matter of mazel anymore, that there is something to what Bar Hedya is saying over here. Again, you know, all the other interpretations that Bar Hedya said, the things that happened may have only happened sometime later. We're going to talk about that soon in connection with the fact that that Rava's wife, the daughter of Rav Chista, passed away. We're going to talk about soon, in fact, that those didn't necessarily happen in order, and some of them may have only happened years later. So therefore, Rava may not have caught on all this time that anything is going on over here until maybe this last time where he sees it really does come true the next day. So maybe therefore now he realizes that he ought to do. One of the Mephoshim gives an interesting possibility. Maybe what it is Bahedia is finally starting to regret that he caused so much trouble to Rava. Later on, we're going to talk about he did greater tshuva, but maybe at least now he's starting to feel bad. And so he's telling him, you know what, from now on, if you keep having dreams, as long as you don't keep paying me, then I may give you bad interpretations. You want good interpretations, start paying me. And maybe therefore that would be what motivated Rava to start paying me. Whatever the case, so Rava started paying him. So eventually Rava came and started paying Bahedia. So now, from now on, when he had dreams, then now he's going to interpret them for good. Omalei, so Rava says to Bahedia, Chazoi Ashisa Dinothal, I saw a wall of my house fell down. Omalei, so Bahedia tells him it's a good thing. Nechosim b'loi mitzorim karnisa means that you're going to be able to acquire possessions without limit. Like, so to speak, the wall has fallen down. You can't even, there's no walls that can contain anymore the areas that you're going to own, the amount of land that you're going to own. Omalei, another time, Rava tells him, Chazoi apadna da abaye d'nofel, I saw that Abaya's mansion fell down, v'chasyan avte, and the dust of Abaya's, the dust from the collapse of the building covered me up. Omalei, so Bahedia tells him, that means Abaya shochiv, it means Abaya is going to pass away, misivte astila gaboch, and his misivte, or the chachamim of his base medrash, are going to come learn Torah by you. Which in fact happened. Eventually, Abaya passed away, and Rava took over as the main Rosh Hashiva of that time, including he got all of Abaya's old Talmidim, and he was Rosh Hashiva for the next 14 years. Agav, this is one reason why in most of Shas we have a Machlokas Abaya and Rava, most of the time the Halacha is like Rava, except for six cases, Ya'al Kagam. One reason for that is, or maybe at least, because since Abaya passed away first, and Rava outlived him by 14 years, so Rava had more of an opportunity. He and his Talmidim had more opportunity to go over what Abaya had said and to discuss it and to bring proofs, pro and con, and therefore they could more often end up concluding that Rava has the better of the argument. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Omalei, another time, Rava tells Bahedia, Chazoi apadne didi denafal, I saw that my mansion fell down, but also kula alma v'shokul levensa levensa, and people were coming, each person was coming and taking one brick from it. So Bahedia tells him, Shmaitzach mevadran ba'alma, that represents that your teachings of Torah are going to spread throughout the whole world. Just like everybody's taking a brick from your mansion, in the same vein, everybody is going to be coming and taking a piece of your Torah and teaching it someplace else. Now, by the way, so here's where Tosfos points out, further on in the Perek, we have an implication in the Perek. We have an implication later on in our perek that Rava's wife, the daughter of Rav Chista, was still alive when Abaya passed away. But here we have in the Gemara that Bahedia earlier had told Rava that your wife is going to pass away. And now he's telling him that Abaya is going to pass away and you're going to take over his yeshiva. So therefore, Tosfos says, obviously you have that the things that were coming true as a result of these dreams were not necessarily coming true in chronological order. So you can have, in other words, that there was a dream that his wife is going to pass away, as Bahedia had interpreted it, and it took time, it took many years, and then finally she passed away. Meanwhile, during that time had been the time when he's paying Bahedia, and when Bahedia told him, Abaya is going to pass away, and therefore these things happen out of order. Another one, Omalei, Rava tells Bahedia, Chazoi de'ivka reishi, I saw that my head split open, the nosa mokri, and my brains fell out. So Omalei, so Bahedia tells him, Udru mi beis sadya nafik, all it means is that stuffing is coming out of your pillow. Evidently, in other words, we're not talking about, Bahedia couldn't really find a positive spin on such a thing, but at least he could make it like it's really not so bad. With that said, though, Ben Yehoyada says, that Ben Yoyada says. So what's Bahed you thinking? And what's Rava thinking? Why on earth, if dreams are meant to be a message, Min HaShemayim, as we've been talking about all this time, about important things that are going to happen in a person's life, why would Hashem even bother giving Rava a dream that involves that stuffing is falling out of his pillow? So Bahedia explains that it's not really a true explanation. Really, in fact, it represents what we're going to have further on in the story, what's going to happen to Bahedia. But Bahedia himself didn't want to interpret it that way because he didn't want to say something bad about himself. So not only he didn't want to, but Min HaShemayim, he wasn't enabled to realize it himself, because then he'll end up finding some way to try to evade that, because what's going to happen to him later in the story. So he just kind of evaded it and said, it just means that stuffing is falling out of your pillow. But in reality, says Ben Yehoyada, it was actually meant to represent what is going to happen to Bahedia himself at the end of the story. So another one continues the Gemara. Omalei Akliyun Halela Mitzra B'Chelmi. Rava says to Bahedia that in my dream they read to me the Hallel. The regular Hallel that we say on Pesach is called Hallel HaMitzri, because it was said in connection. We say it on Pesach in connection with Yetzias Mitzrayim. The point is, you also have, by contrast, you have Hallel HaGodol Kuf Lamed Vav that we say in Shabbos morning davening with the 26 Kilo Elam Chastos. That one is called Hallel HaGodol. The Gemara explains in Pesachim, because it talks about that Hashem, the next to last pasuk is Noisim Lechem L'chol Basar, which is a tremendous, a Godol thing that Hashem provides for everybody. So therefore we call that Hallel HaGodol. And then the regular Hallel that we say in Yom Tov and Rosh Chodesh and whatnot is called Hallel HaMitzvah. So now Rava says to Bahedia, I saw in my dream where they were reading Hallel HaMitzvah to me. Omalei, so Bahedia tells it, Nisim Yisrach Shilach means that Nisim are going to happen to you. Because that's what Hallel was originally made up for. The Gemara in Pesachim has a whole discussion about what was the historical event for which they were first Mesach and Hallel, and the Gemara gives many different ones, but that it happened for one or another Ness in Jewish history. In fact, Rashi says over here, the month itself is called Nisan in recognition of the Nisim that happened to the Jewish people then. So the Gemara continues. When this last one took place, when Rava had this last dream, about the Hallel HaMitzri, and Bahedia interprets for him that it means Nisim are going to happen, they were both traveling together. Rava and Bahedia were both traveling on the same boat. Omar, so now Bahedia starts thinking to himself, Bahadi Gavra de Misrachishle Nisalomali. Why should I want to be around a person to whom Nisim are going to happen? I just interpreted his dream that says that some kind of Ness is going to happen to him. What happens, for example, the nest might be, Rashi says, let's say, for example, the ship will sink and he will be, and his life will be saved and mine won't. So maybe I'd better get off this boat and get onto another boat. Bahadi de Kosolik, so as he was going up to get out of the boat, Nofel Sifra Mine, he dropped a book. Ashkeche Rava found the book and picked it up. V'choza, and he saw the Havaksibbe, that it says on it, I guess on the front of it, like on the title page or something, it says, Kol HaCholim Esochen Achar HaPeh. All dreams follow, the interpretation of them follows how they're interpreted by the mouth, as we discussed before, the various explanations of why that should be so and what kind of dreams that applies to and so forth. So now Rava caught on what had been going on all this time. It's not a matter of mazel, it's not a matter of that whatever. He realized that now all of those bad things that happened to him were all a result of Bahedia interpreting his dreams badly. Omar, so he says to him, Rosha, b'didoch kaima, this all happened because of you. This is all your fault. B'didoch kaima actually means it all depended on you, meaning you had the ability all this time to interpret my dreams for good, and instead you chose, because you were greedy, to interpret them for bad. B'tzi'autan kolahai, and you caused me so much tzaras. Well, you should know, Rava says, Kulo machil malach, I'm willing to be moichu you all of them, except for the fact that you interpreted one of my dreams that the daughter of Rav Chista, his first wife, is going to pass away. And that's a tremendous blow for a husband, that his first wife should die. So he says, I'm not going to be moichu. In fact, there's a different girsa that he says, not only that, also another one of the dreams that Bahedia had interpreted is that his children are going to die. So according to that other girsa, Rav is saying, I'm not forgiving you for either of those. Not for the fact that you said that Rav Chista's daughter, my first wife, is going to pass away, and not for the fact also that you said that my children are going to. So Rav says, Yehei Rava, may it be Hashem's will, delimsera hu gavra, that person, meaning you, should be handed over lidei demalchusa delem rachmu alei, to a government that will have no rachmanus on him. In other words, that's the punishment that you deserve. That's the punishment that you deserve for causing me to have to go through all of this. Now, Bahedya, we learned yesterday, was, now not everybody agrees that there are, in fact, I mentioned yesterday that Bahedya may have even been a Talmud Chacham. There is, in fact, a Bahedya mentioned in other places in Shas, in statements of Halacha. Not necessarily is that the same Bahedya. And in fact, there seem to be some of the Mephoshim who understand that maybe in fact, he was a Goy. Whatever the case, whether he was a Goy, whether he was a Yid, whether even he was a Talmud Chacham. So now Bahedya realized he's in big trouble. My Evid. So Bahedya thinks to himself, what should I do now? Well, Gmiri, we know the Kabbalah, the Kilas Chacham, Afilu B'chinam Hiba. We know that a curse of a Talmud Chacham, even if it's for nothing, is going to come true. That, now, not for nothing as when it's completely unjustified, then we don't say that. But in other words, the point is that when you have different Rishonim explain about it, we're not talking about when it's completely unjustified. For example, the Rashba explains this, the Ramban and others. If it's completely unjustified, then yeah, it's not going to come true. You have a pasuk in Mishlei to that effect, kilas chinam loy savoy, a completely unjustified klola is not going to come. But over here, we're talking about that after all, he did deserve it to some extent. So we're talking about, in other words, so he might not, objectively, he might not deserve such a severe punishment, but because the Talmud Chacham cursed him, therefore he ends up actually getting that severe punishment. So Bahedya thinks to himself, listen, we know that even when a person is high of a punishment to a certain degree, and the Chacham curses him, then it's going to come true. V'choshekin Rava debedina kolayin. How much more so it's going to be with Rava, where he has very good reason to curse me, because the truth is, it's true, Ataka did very badly by him. So what do I do? Omar, so he thinks to himself, Ekum ve'egri. You know what? Let me get up and go into Golos. The Omar, Golos mechaperes oven. In fact, we say that a person going into Golos is mechaper for Aveus. But the idea being that Rambam explains in Hilchos Truva, the idea behind it is that when a person goes into Golos, it makes him that now he feels more humble. He doesn't feel as proud of himself. He's not in a place where anybody knows anybody, where he recognizes the area already, and therefore that automatically helps him develop a certain anivus. So he figures, let me do that, and that'll help me mechaper for what I did. Come Golos Bei Remoi. So he went into Golos to the area of the Romans. He went to the city of Rome. He went and sat by the doorway of the main guardian of the wardrobe of the king. You know, a king has a fancy wardrobe with all his royal robes and all his regular clothing and whatnot. There's somebody in charge of all of that, somebody making sure that they're washed and clean and pressed and so on and so forth. So this guy was the head person in charge of that, and now Bahedya went and sat in front of his door. Like maybe he's hoping the guy will give him a job or something. Well, what happened was that chief wardrobe official had a dream. Omalei, so he goes to Bahedya. He says, evidently he recognized that Bahedya was a professional dream interpreter. Maybe he told him that he is. So he tells him, I had a dream. That a needle went into my finger. So what does that mean? Omalei, so Bahedya tells him, unfortunately, apparently Bahedya had not yet overcome his taiva for money, which was what got him in trouble in the first place. So he says, Havli Zuzah, give me a Zuz, and then I'll interpret it. So the guy didn't want to give him the Zuz. So Bahedya didn't tell him anything. Maybe he figured I'm not going to get in as much trouble if I give it. Maybe he figured I don't want to give a bad interpretation. Fine, I learned my lesson with Rava not to do that. But he figures maybe then the best thing maybe is just not to say anything at all. In fact, actually, Udiu with Rava and Abaya, he never actually said in so many words to Rava that I want you to pay me. He said before maybe an explanation that maybe at the end he tells him that, but he certainly didn't tell him originally. So why didn't he do that by Rava? So one answer. So Ben Yehoyada says an answer. Now look, I mean, he knows Rava is a great Rosh Hashiva, so he's embarrassed to ask him openly and then say that and say that I want money. But here, he's another point. Ben Yehoyada says, look, he's in a new city. Nobody knows him over there. So therefore, he has no choice but to ask. Whereas when he was back in his original hometown, everybody knows him. So he could expect that everybody knows he needs to pay him. And if Rava doesn't pay him, then he holds it against him. Anyway, so he didn't say anything to him. Then the next day, the guy tells him, "Chazoy d'nafal tichla b'tauchen etzbasi." I saw that worms are attacking two of my fingers. Again, omale havli zuzah. Again, Barhedia says, "Give me a zuzah." Again, v'lo yohivle. Again, the guy didn't want to give him any. Lo omale. So again, he didn't give him an answer. Then finally, the guy says another dream, "Chazoy d'nafal tichla b'kula yada." Now I saw that worms are attacking my entire hand. So now already, even though he's not paying him, finally Barhedia decides, you know what, fine, I'll tell you. So Barhedia asked him, what are you in charge of exactly? What's your job? Okay, he tells him, I'm in charge of the king's silks. So Barhedia tells him, in that case, your last dream means nafal tichla b'kula shiroi, means that worms have attacked the entire wardrobe. So in other words, when he saw first that a needle was going into one finger, means that the attack of the worms was starting. If he had realized at that time, he could have still saved most of the wardrobe. And the same thing the second time, now he's telling him finally, you're a goner. All of the clothes are ruined by the worms or moths or whatever it is. So sure enough, Shami Bey Malka, they heard in the king's palace what happened, that all of his wardrobe was ruined. And they're bringing this chief of the wardrobe, and they're about to execute him. But the guy, the officer says, "I know, am I? What do you want? Why should I be guilty? Better you should arrest this guy who knew all along what was going on, and he didn't say." So it's more his fault than my fault. Asyula Barhedia. So sure enough, they brought Barhedia and arrested him. Omale, and the king says to him, "I'm too zuz didach. Look at this, because of your zuz that you wanted, choru shiroi demalka. Thanks to you, the entire silk wardrobe of the king is ruined." In fact, Ben Yehoyada points out, I mean, look, of course, the wardrobe official is in charge of them. He can't really shirk his job and say, look, I didn't know. But the fact is, he doesn't usually have to check them on a daily basis, Ben Yehoyada explains. He goes and he shakes them out once a month or something. Now, all of a sudden, that in 3 nights, the whole thing is destroyed. It's something very unusual. So he says, I couldn't have known that that's going on. But if Barhedia knows what's going on, then he should have said something earlier. So they blamed him there because of your one zuz that you wanted. Therefore, the king's whole wardrobe was destroyed. So now you need to be punished. And his punishment was kofsu tre arza b'chevla. They tied together two cedar trees with a rope. Asu chad kari l'chad arza v'chad kari l'chad arza. They tied one of Barhedia's legs to one tree and the other one to the other tree. V'sharu l'chevla. Then they untied or cut the rope, and now the trees are going to go, and the trees were bent over, so they're under tremendous tension. Now you cut the rope, and the tension is broken, and the trees snap back up straight. Ad the istalik. Until they stood up straight, and also a different gear says the itstilit, which means that he was cut in half. That Barhedia's body was ripped in half by the two trees. Omar Rava, and Rava says, in fact, loy machilnalei ad the itstilik reisha. I'm not fully forgiving him until his head is split open. His full kapara is going to be that not only his body is broken in half, but even his head. Sure enough, each of the trees snapped back into its original position. It's the liquidation of enough of the terrain. And sure enough, his head was split open into two. That was, we said before, Ben Yehoyada said that was the meaning of Rava's dream about his head breaking open and his brains falling out. That is actually what happened to Bahedya, that he ended up getting his full punishment that way. So what does it mean? Now, how does Rava know what's going on? So one obvious possibility is that Rava knew it was Ruach HaKodesh. He's not anywhere near Rome, but he knew what was going on. And so maybe he said in advance that when he gets punished, I'm not fully forgiving him until even that comes true. And that way he'll have his complete punishment in Olam Hazeh. So Ben Yehoyada explains the symbolism behind it. Since Rava had told him you deserve punishment mainly because of what you said about my wife, the daughter of Rechista, a husband and wife together are one goof. So therefore his goof deserved to be broken in half. And the fact that this wife of Rava, Rechista's daughter, was a great tzaddikus. So therefore Rava knew that in order for this to be complete in the scapper, he needs that his actual head that an Atara is worn over should also be split in half. So that's what happened, and sure enough, eventually, so then Rava was willing to be moichel him, and I guess what happened to him in the Olam Emes, I suppose we can imagine that now that he got his punishment, he gets his place in Olam Haba. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ula. Yud Beis Tavis. Continuing on this topic of the days that used to be fast days, which are going to become Yom Tovim, La'asid Lava, that ever talks about in a way or even greater than the original Yom Tovim that existed before. So before we talk about the idea, because they're going to be but La'asid Lava, whereas the new ones are going to be much more chashuv. So now another point that ever says in the same sicha is, the fasts that are going to be Yehov for the Moedim Tovim are going to be greater even than Purim. We know that Purim is also not but the loss of Lavi. But the Pasuk after all says, Purim Yehudim, Mizaram, the Chiddush is that they won't be bottled. So meaning, in other words, relative to the Giluim of Yemos Mashiach, which are even higher than Purim, so that my love, Purim, will be noticeable in that. But certainly the Yom Tovim that were going to be newly Yemos Mashiach are going to be even higher than the Yom Tovim of Purim. So in other words, you're going to have three different things. You're going to have, there's the Yom Tovim that exist now that are going to be the except for Purim, that are going to be Batal Asid Lavai. Certainly the Tzoymas that become those are going to be greater. Then you have Purim itself, which is still going to be exist Asid Lavai, but not as great as the Yom Tovim that are going to come from Asara B'Tavis and Shivasa B'Tamuz and the rest of them, which are going to be on the highest level of all. Okay. Halacha, still in the middle of the halachas of Bracha Achrona. Shabbos and Yom Tov, when you're saying Bracha Mein Shalosh, you say Rutzei or Zachrein, or the case may be. If you forget it, then you don't have to go back. Another halacha, when you're saying the Bracha Mein Shalosh, you have to be machmir in it, just like Birkas HaMazon, with the various things that were explained in an earlier simon about things that you have to be careful. Among others, that you should be sitting, you should be wearing your hat and jacket, etc. The Alter Rebbe mentions particularly the matter of sitting, that when you're saying Ala Michya or Ala Eitz, or whichever version of that bracha you're saying, you should be sitting. That's by the way, seems to be not a very well-known thing. It seems to be people don't realize they eat something and they say Ala Michya or Ala Peris, as the case may be, and they're standing. I actually had a while back, somebody had brought mezonos in the morning for a yard site, and I ate some of it, and then I was saying the bracha achrona standing, and Rabbi Elzeba pointed out that you're supposed to sit for it. So it's something that needs to be better known, that in fact you're supposed to sit for the bracha main shalosh. Okay.